Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, and we've got a really cool guest on the show today. It's Brad Power. He's a director of product at Kendra Scott, a jewelry, fashion, and philanthropy outfit in Austin, Texas. And he is also a UX director. I want to hear a lot about that because on this show, we're very interested in that overlap between strategy and design. And has been a product manager, technology director in the past, and has done e-commerce work at Whole Foods. So we're going to hear about a bunch of this stuff and his insights into product. Brad, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, likewise. So let's start off getting into a little bit about your background. You've done technology. You know UX. You know product. What's your background and how did that kind of lead to you being a product leader today?
I think I've always been interested in the customer. So my first career out of college was in a call center, and I developed an affinity, I guess, for retaining customers, which led into like a marketing related job. And over the years, I've had the opportunity to work on a lot of back of the house as well as customer facing tools. And the interesting thing has always been for me is that intersection of technology, customer, and business. And I think that's kind of like the Venn diagram of product management is trying to figure out the features that aren't working as well as you want for your customers or your business, or the features that you're lacking altogether. And so I think that journey through customer care and like really listening to the customer in the old school way over a phone or via email to, you know, more modern ways where we're able to do it through CSAT scores and surveys and social media and all the other great channels we have today. But that experience throughout multiple areas of marketing is kind of what brought me to where I am today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so a little bit about Kendra Scott, you know, how does that overlap with kind of like your SaaS background? Well, first of all, are you guys doing SaaS over there or is it more kind of, you know, customer centric kinds of interfaces? What are you guys doing over there?
Primarily SaaS, right? I mean, although the brand feel big to a lot of folks, we're still a fairly small company. And so we haven't gotten into trying to build all of our own systems. I have a philosophy in the technical space, right? If you're trying to lead with the technical differentiator, right? Like you better own the technology because you're trying to continue to iterate. If you're trying to lead with the quality of your physical product and your customer service, which is what we're trying to do, then you can kind of ride the wave of some of those other technical leaders. And so I think that's kind of where we are in the size of our business and also the kind of business that we're in, where we would continue to lean on other partners to help us deliver the right experience for our customers.
Right. And so with your position, you work with product people like on the strategy side and also the designers.
Correct. Yeah. I have both on my team.
How do you blend all of that together? Because I've seen great scenarios where you have people with a design background and they kind of bring that design thinking into the strategy, even when they're working in more of a strategy role. And you get a lot of really cool benefits from that kind of a thing. What is kind of like the relationship between those two things with you guys, or what do you believe in, whether or not you're kind of doing it at Kendra Scott? What do you think works best?
I think you always want to harness the experience and intellect of your people, right? And a great idea can come from anywhere. And so I think what we try to do as much as we can is collaborate together, set some sort of North Star vision of where we want to be, and then have the discipline to do that in baby steps, right? Because I think we all can get excited about the idea that is our baby, right? It's our baby. We want our baby to be perfect, but a lot of times customers don't need perfect. They need just good enough, right? And so a phrase in the industry that I've kind of adopted is kind of this minimal lovable product. Like, what, it's not about viable. It's like, what's the minimum amount you need to do to get your customers to love it? And so I think the way we do that, Thomas, is a little bit about letting people take work that's exciting for them, right? And if you're in UX, you could still have a leadership role of a program, right? You might lead the implementation with the development team because you're the closest to how the designs need to look and the technology that we have. And most good UX people I've worked with in my career had coding somewhere in their background. And so we can kind of let them lead that way. We also let them lead in their expertise when they're sharing out the designs with other departments or collaborating with other departments. And so I think it's kind of trying to set the team members up for success based upon their experience and their passion and where they're trying to grow, and not have the lines be so fixed that this has to be a product management discipline and this has to be a UX discipline, and let them blur a little more naturally so that the teams have kind of that ownership and passion is what we all want, right? To enjoy what we're doing.
Do you have the ability to apply method in when you're dealing on the strategy side of things, or do you just kind of let people creatively bottom up do it? And the reason why I ask about it is because as a designer, when I started getting more and more interested in the strategy side of things and how do you actually lead a product, it was at times a little bit difficult to find books, resources that dive as deep into applying the design thinking to actual business decisions. And it's much easier to find that, like in the design world, it's filled with researchers and artists. So people are constantly publishing books, going to conferences, giving talks about it. But then I started thinking about, well, how do I apply this stuff to the actual process of business in terms of figuring out what the requirements should be, figuring out what should we be kind of aiming for? You alluded to some of it, I think, in the beginning, like, you know, core value, you know, in-house and all that kind of stuff. So do you guys, are you mature enough as an operation? And do you kind of have the luxury with your talents on board of applying actual method to the strategy itself is using methods and say, we're going to get stakeholders in the room and with the sticky notes, and we're going to use this specific thing to figure out where the product should be. Like, how does method play a role in that explicitly?
I'd say the thing that comes to mind first from your question is kind of like the benchmarking exercises we'll traditionally do, right? Where we'll calibrate ourselves against other great brands, regardless if they're in the same space as us or not, and apply some sort of scoring to how we all intrinsically value this feature or this button, right? And so I think that there's a method there. I think one of the other things, right, is trying to help everybody understand that everything that we do can be measured in some way. Because if you can't measure it, then you don't know it's valuable and you won't know it's working, right? And so that's kind of where that blending can happen. The product managers can help the designers think a little bit more about the value of their work and how that value can be measured so that you can show you're making progress. And so I think that's another way we bring some methodology to it. And then it also helps the designers because a lot of times I think they may not understand how they're contributing to value, right? And I'm a big believer in value, right? We should do things that are valuable for our customers, and our internal folks should know the value that they're generating or not, right? Because sometimes things, the best idea just falls flat when you put it in front of the customers. And so having that way to measure it when it goes live also gives you an indicator if it's working or if you need to course correct, or maybe you need to shut it down altogether. Does that get kind of what you were hoping to get?
No, that's great. And so going off on the measurement side of things, I'm a really, really a firm believer that the whole team's got to be based in reality, right? And it sounds like kind of what you're saying is that, you know, we can kind of get in a room and people can share their ideas all day, but we've got to have metrics playing a role in that stuff. Are you a believer in kind of the tools, the various tools, it's slipping my mind, the what they're called, but that allow you to measure usage data about your customers and clients, and having a, you know, kind of a data science department and having an operation around that to where you're systematically getting information on a continuous basis. A lot of companies don't go all out on that. What are your views around that?
There's so many great ways. I call them signals, right? That our customers send us data. And one of the things I believe is like, we can't decide where our customer wants to complain. It might be in a social channel, right? It might be through customer care. It might be in a store because we have a lot of retail stores. And so we try to do the best we can, as you're describing, bring that data in and in some way make it somewhat consistent so that we're able to look for themes across multiple channels. And so we do like a CSAT score weekly. We have our customer care team is a part of our weekly business review where they bring the top themes that are there. The social team is there and they're bringing the top themes. And so it being a still a little bit smaller company, it's not like hard data science, but we're trying to take all those signals in and use them where we can. And then what we tend to do with our testing and analytics team more is when we have a theme, how can we test it at a small scale, right? So that we can find out it's beneficial before we invest a lot in it through some sort of, A/B or multivariate testing. And then with the measurement side is the other part, right? The test team helps you build it, and then the analytics team helps you test it. And so that's kind of how we play. And all those for us are all within kind of the e-commerce domain. And so that helps us prioritize across our domain in a way where we're not putting in a ticket and waiting weeks for us to be prioritized across a analytics team that might support 10 or 15 different departments. And so we're trying to keep the scope as close as we can to what our goals are, going back to your question of how are we moving the needle? And if we're not, what can we collectively do to improve on it?
Now, somebody might think that e-commerce is all figured out, right? So that was one of the first areas of the web, back in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. It was a wild west. And then norms started getting established and, things started, then you had big players like Amazon taking over huge segments of it. What would you say to someone who thinks that, well, e-commerce, it's all figured out? You have a list of products and you have a shopping cart in the corner, and you could use a Shopify or something like
Right.
that. So the people who think it's just all figured out and there's really no more strategy and design work to do, what would you tell someone who thinks that?
I think our customers are constantly changing, right? And so the bar is being raised. Again, depending upon how your brand relates in your customer's mind to other brands, the functionality of, say, an Amazon becomes an expectation. Like, who doesn't want next day or same day delivery now? And so, okay, now how do you manifest that in your organization? What are you able to do? I think, another great one is like when we think about the speed and capacity that most people have and the bandwidth they get to the internet, they're expecting a more feature-rich experience, right? Photography continues to move forward. We haven't talked about AI, and I can't believe it. How long we've been on the call? 15 minutes. We haven't said the AI. But you start to think about now we have these new visually immersive experience that people are going to expect or they're able to somehow interact in a commerce experience as well. And so while the core nuts and bolts of checking out and doing those kinds of things, of course, haven't changed, I think the experience and the way people expect to interact with a brand is what continues to push us.
Okay, so let's do it. Let's do AI. Let's talk about what do you think, AI is a lot of things. And I see it playing a lot of an interesting role in various different products. And I think the way people think about AI, it's a big spectrum of what people believe the possibilities are. What do you think the opportunities are, or where we are with AI, specifically like in e-commerce and the kind of work that you do?
We're just like everybody. We're just beginning, right? I mean, I think when you start to think about contextual experiences, right? Like that can happen where, imagine when you're going to a website and it's not traditional navigation anymore. It's talking to the internet experience or typing to the internet experience and having a page be dynamically rendered with content specific to your search results. The way your content is created is certainly already changing, right? I mean, the big announcement last week was about Sora, right? It's like to be able to think that somebody big like Tyler Perry said, "I'm not going to go do an $800 million movie development anymore because this is going to take a lot of what we do today in the movie business." Like, those are big signals that are happening from people much smarter than me about how content itself is going to be created. But I think the interesting thing for customers, right, is like that true one-to-one personalization feels closer now than it ever has in the past, where attributes about you can be quickly interpreted and generated in a way that we just haven't been able to do in the past. And so it's touching customer care already with chatbots, right? It's touching legal with being able to review contracts for keywords faster. I mean, it's touching every part of the business, and it's exciting. I mean, one of my favorite podcasters is a guy, Scott Galloway, and I think he long time ago he said don't worry about AI taking your job. Worry about the person that knows how to use AI taking your job, right? And so I think it's becoming a thing for all of us. Like, you have to figure out how it's intersecting with your life and be able to use it in a way. It's another tool, you know, it's another tool that we all have to have in our tool belt, and we all have to know how to use. But I think, like with anything else, the human imagination will find things that, like, I can't even begin to think about today, right? As we get deeper in how we use it in our day-to-day work.
Yeah, that's so interesting, right? And we are, like, just from comparing now with 2 years ago, it's a complete night and day difference. Like, last year we were seeing the beginnings of the LLM.
Right. Yeah, we were all like using it to improve our copy, right? Like, help me write a better article. And now it's
right.
Oh, just made a movie from 5 words I gave it.
That's right. Oh yeah, it's crazy times we're in, right? And so how about so in terms of thinking about vision, there's a lot of product managers, I think, who want to be visionaries, or they want to exercise the more visionary side of their thinking, but they're kind of weighed down with the day-to-day tasks of the short-term requirements, and you can't neglect those because you'll go out of business if you neglect those. Are there any strategies or approaches or mindsets that you and your team take when it comes to handling, making sure that you're handling the day-to-day short-term goals and balancing that with making sure that you've got your long-term goals still on the radar?
Yeah, I think if you can figure out a way to set long-term goals be financial, right? Like, where you're trying to drive some percentage of the business or even some dollar amount, it's kind of goes back to the point earlier, like, you're delivering value versus features. You can quickly get trapped into, you commit to your leadership team buttons on pages, or your leadership team tells you they want buttons on pages. And when you get trapped in that, that's what I call feature delivery, where you're not really sure that the thing that you're doing is driving the business forward. But if you can focus more on value delivery, like, I owe the business $10 million from this area of work around payments, let's just make something up, that gives you more creativity as the marketplace is changing, or you're learning more about the requirements that you're writing, that the thing that you need to deliver can change as long as it can still provide the value that's there. You also see, like, going back to the old Google principles of, like, some sort of 20% creative time. I think that making sure that you have something in your roadmap where there's the opportunity to still introduce creativity and innovation is important. And then you have to manifest that all the way down to the individual. You have to empower them and give them time each week to think or act creatively and in an innovative way. Or, to your point, you'll be stuck with this kind of static roadmap that, as your customers are changing and the world around you is changing, you're still delivering the things you talked about 12 months ago. And that may not be the most important thing to your business anymore.
Nick, can you share maybe either a moment or an insight where there was a strategic decision that either you had to make or your team had to make, where it really made the difference between, you know, your product kind of going in one direction or the other, and that stands out as important to you, and maybe the role that the evidence before you played in that? If you don't have something specific, maybe the type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think what can happen a lot to any company, regardless of size and vertical that you're in or whatever, is that you can begin to believe that you know the customer and you are the customer, and you really have to step back and make sure that you continue to listen to the customer, and ideally have the right representation, going back to, like, diversity and inclusion, right? Like, the right diversification needs to exist in your leadership team and your development team and wherever else, because I think the more your team represents the kind of customers that you're trying to go and the way they think, the easier it is to move fast on behalf of your customers, the less likely it is, the more. And so things that I can think about are where a group of people sitting around with all the best intentions thought they knew what customers wanted to, let's say, know about their brand, and only to have it kind of fall flat where they didn't understand because of age, background, whatever it is. And so I think, like, that's a key thing of, like, working backwards from your customer. Who are they? What do they want? And being really true to, like we talked about earlier, the signals that you get from your customers. Are you listening to them every week through some sort of voice of the customer type program because it's unconscious bias. We all have it, and it's not in any way malicious or bad intention, right? But like, you lived a life experience, which is who you are as a person, and that's awesome. But there's billions of us on this planet, right? And there's different life experiences there. And so I think we can all kind of get caught up in that, especially when you start to have success. When you have a couple of wins, you start to think, oh, I got this nailed. Like you said, e-commerce is easy. Like, I know my customers inside and out, and you really got to challenge yourself. Get out in the stores, listen to the customers, diversify your team. It's a lot of different signals that you need to be hearing from, and those inputs are critical into delivering the right product.
Brad Power, a lot of great insights today. Where can people find more about you, your company, and what you're working on? Should they go to LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn's the best place for me. I explore all the social platforms. I just find I'm not good at restraining myself from being on them a lot. So I use them to understand how they work, and then I usually get off of them because I find they suck my time away. But yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best place.
I just can't keep up with the social media. It has to become part of your life if you're going to do it.
Right. I think so. And I think that's it, right? I haven't given in all that time yet.
Right. Brad, great to have you on the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.